Today on Between the Lines, the journey of a man, a woman, and an alligator, all on a quest for love with my guest, Homer Hickam. Welcome, I'm Barry Kibrick. Homer is the award-winning author of Rocket Boys, his memoir that was turned into the hit film October Sky. Now what many are calling a prequel to his life, Homer delivers an epic tale called Carrying Albert Home that takes us on a wild adventure that can best be summed up as a story of kismet.
I'm a writer today because I was a reader when I was 11 years old. And it was...
You do not need to prove your state of happiness to anybody.
Most of these speeches were as much as a month in preparation.
The characters, the heroes in this book are seekers of truth in a story that involves a lot of corruption.
You don't get a chance to really talk about what's real. And that is the first thing to do.
Homer, it seems like it's been way too long. It is such a pleasure to have you back here on Between the Lines.
Well, thanks for having me, Barry. It's great to be back.
Well, we spoke a little in the green room, and I have to share this with the audience. This is a novel, but yet it is based on a real, true story. And as I was reading this thing, as I told my wife, I said, every page, I couldn't stop. It is the discovery of this adventure as it unfolds that becomes literally unimaginable, and yet you know so much of it is true. So like I told you, I'm not giving any of the secrets away, except for the one that you have to say in the beginning. I'm not giving any of the secrets away. I'll let you do all of that if you wish to, but I'm going to talk about the deep, penetrating philosophy that just permeates this book.
Well, but it's interesting that readers who come to me after they've read the book, they've enjoyed the book, they've laughed through the book, they cried through the book, then they reflect on it a bit and they go, how much of this is true? Right. And so that's the type of emails that I get. And my answer is, well, it's all true, except for the parts that are not, and they're true too.
Oh, and that's...
If you get my drift.
I do get your drift, and that's what we're going to talk about. I want to tell everybody, it's called, obviously, I say this in the introduction, it's Carrying Albert Home. It is literally a family epic of your parents taking an alligator back to Orlando. I'm going to leave it at that. During the Great Depression, mm-hmm. Then I'll go further in. But that's what the story, that's the plot line, so to speak. That's not what it's about, but that's the plot line.
Right. Well, and of course, the Depression era is an interesting era for any author to write about that has great parallels, though, however, with today. Every generation goes through this period in our history that is unique. But in a lot of ways, today reflects, I think, the Depression era in terms of economics, in terms of leadership at the national level, in terms of young people saying, there's something else out there. I need to, this world that I live in, I can make something else out of it. And so Carrying Albert Home is the story of my parents, Homer and Elsie Hickam, yes, but it's their great moment in life when they had an opportunity for not only an adventure that where they discover America, if you will, but also themselves.
And what they discover is one of the things, in fact, and you talk about something very parallel, as if in our manufacturing world, they're living in Colwood, where your Rocket Boys and then October Sky takes place when you were born. This is prior to your birth, but your dad's a miner, and you know it's the life of that area, that region. It resembles what's happening today because it is filled with melancholy. There's despair, and in this case, a tremendous amount of coal dust that permeates the air and that your mom just hates dealing with.
Yeah, and this much we can say about it is that Elsie, my mom, my future mom, and Homer have different thoughts about living in Colwood. Homer actually loves it. He has a good job, and it's something that he sees that he can make a career out of. Elsie, however, feels that she's ambitious and so talented, and she just feels so constrained being stuck in this little mining town when she had actually broken out temporarily. She went to Florida from West Virginia. When she graduated from high school, she went to Florida, and there she met a young man whose name was Buddy Ebsen, who later became Uncle Jed in the Beverly Hillbillies and, you know, well-known Hollywood actor. They fell in love. Then Buddy ended up going to Hollywood. Elsie went back to West Virginia. One thing or the other happened because of Kismet, our destiny. And Elsie ended up marrying Homer. And Buddy sent her as a wedding present a baby alligator named Albert. And so sets the tale.
And the tale begins when you're watching the Davy Crockett Show, which also Buddy Ebsen was on, and all of a sudden Mom comes running out to the TV, and that's how you then realize there's a story brewing behind this whole
right,
thing.
Right, and that began it. That was 1955. I was 12 years old. That she said, "I know that fellow," and I said, You knew Davy Crockett? And I thought to myself, well, I knew you were old. I didn't know that you were that old. And she said, no, I know that fellow that was singing that song. His name was Buddy Ebsen. He's the one that gave me Albert. And I said, well, who's Albert? And she said, well, he was the alligator. And then she began to tell me over many, many, many years, and also my father chimed in with his part of the story, and they told this story completely out of sequence at various times in my life when I think that they felt like that I needed to hear this story. They told the story of when they carried Albert home.
Well, you use these words about your own inclination of this story. Like a beautiful flower unfurling to greet the dawn, an embedded truth was revealed. So that's why when people ask you what's true and what's not, it almost doesn't matter. What is truth is what is truly embedded in this. And that goes back to, as Captain Laird, your father's foreman, says to him, Homer, this is a journey you must take. Yes. Because it's kismet.
Exactly. And Homer was hoping the captain would say, no, you can't go, I need you. But instead he said, go. I wish I was a young man myself and I could take this journey. And along the journey, we find Homer and Elsie both questioning why they're out there. And the people that are out there tell them that they're on a journey of discovery to find out who they really are.
Well, in fact, some of the story doesn't even unfold until you're in your 50s after you've written Rocket Boys and a bunch of other things. Your parents even were there to see October Sky being made. So, and of course your mom, and obviously she was, I think it was Cooper, right? Wait, who played your dad? Chris Cooper.
Yeah.
And you played, and Gyllenhaal played you.
Right.
And mom was already, the funniest running gag through this, I don't mind sharing, is mom literally believes and knows, and you begin to believe it too, that she can do absolutely anything she wants. And as Homer tells her, the problem is you want to do everything.
Exactly right. Quick thing, on the set, she met Natalie Kanerday, who played her in the movie. And Elsie basically says, well, if I'd have known Sonny was going to make me famous, I would have stayed, you know, younger and thinner, which Natalie didn't really quite know how to handle that, except she was a very nice lady and she handled it very well. But then mom started pointing out, you know, I know that's a gaffer, that's a best boy, that's a script girl, watch out for the script girl, Sonny. You know, and I'm going, Mom, how do you know? Wait a minute, when you carried Albert home, right? She says, yes, your father and I were in a Tarzan movie. And then she started telling about that. And I'm going, I love it. You know, I love that for just a moment, she had this great adventure. However it happened, it was something that she could reflect on and satisfy her, even though she spent her whole life in this little coal town, by telling these stories. It somehow kept her on an even keel and satisfied with the life that she ended up with, because she had those great moments when she carried Albert home.
And you know, Dad knows that this journey is going to be a painful experience. Dad is very funny because he's very simple on a basic level, and yet He's, in this book, one of the wisest men you'll ever meet. He's also very calm and gentle, yet one of the strongest and toughest men you will ever meet. So that's interesting. He knows that this is going to be a painful experience in his life. And for most of the journey, Mom is really excited about the adventure, even though she's got a whole plan on what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But Homer's just doing it to get this damn alligator out of his life. And then, though, the Captain Laird, who your dad worked for, he says, perhaps that's even more of a reason why you need to experience
this. Exactly.
Because pain draws out sometimes the best, most important things in life. Mm-hmm.
And we see how much Homer Sr. loves Elsie as we go through this. Elsie, frankly, is somewhat obnoxious during this trip because we know that her whole heart is not into this marriage.
Oh, Homer, you say sometimes obnoxious. The fact that your father doesn't kill her at least 10 times, I mean, in fact, she runs into characters that want to kill her, but she is so dynamic and full of sass, you can't help but love her.
Yeah, well, she loves herself.
Yeah.
And that was the thing about Elsie, she always loved herself. And she imparted some of that into me. It's like, well, you are who you are, you might as well just love it and just go with it. And so we bring out some of that in Carrying Albert Home. Again, this is a novel. It is a tall tale. It is a family legend. There are fantasy elements to this, but ultimately the truth evolves. And even though, yes, Elsie is obnoxious, and I've heard that from a lot of readers, they end up at the end loving her just as the real Elsie. At first, she said exactly what she thought, and it would take you aback a bit, but after a while, you came to love her. There was something about her that you just loved.
By the way, Homer also says everything that's on his mind. He's a man who, in fact, I'm going to use your words, he is in a situation, again, I'm giving away no situation, I refuse. He's in a situation, by the way, they meet famous people, way more famous than Buddy Epson on this trip as well. I'm just letting people know that. He sees a strike going on, and he sees in these strikers' eyes the hate that's there, and he realizes that hate is an awful thing, and he says these words, the way I see it, because he needs to correct the situation. If everybody ran from bad things instead of trying to stop them, bad things would be all there is. So this is a man of true courage who speaks courage to power, truth to power, and is not afraid of anything.
He's not afraid of anything, and neither is Elsie. But Elsie's in a different way. Elsie is getting involved with this strike that they run into in North Carolina at a sock mill, where strikers who are, I think you could probably call them communists, Elsie is attracted to them. She likes the fact that they're revolutionaries. The only thing that she doesn't like about them is that they're not very effective. They're bad communists. They're not going to get what they want. Well, Elsie Lavender Hickam, by golly, will get them what they want. She will show them, even though she's never done it before, she will show them how to lead a strike on this sock mill and just scare the bejesus out of this the mill owner. And of course, poor Homer is visiting the mill when they all arrive with Albert in the wagon, dragged up with Albert and his sign, you know, take a bite out of the mill or whatever it was. But it's like suddenly Homer and Elsie face each other, all these strikers who are not very good strikers behind, but they're waving their signs and they're chanting. And then the bad guys, the muscle men over here on the mill side and the mill owner, and Homer's with the mill owner, Elsie's with the strikers, and Albert. They meet, and all of a sudden, everything fades away. Only Homer and Albert and Elsie are there. And they talk about their marriage and about what that you can't do this, Elsie. You this is not going to turn out right. And she basically says, but it should. Why doesn't it, Homer? And he says, I can't tell you why, Elsie. It's just not. And so, and then everything comes back out, fades back in, and we see they're back where they were. And sure enough, what Homer said, it didn't work out, not by any means.
And yet Homer in this, and by the way, he has to do everything to keep his unhappiness under control because he realizes he doesn't want to lose his wife, but he uses you use these words for him, I guess, or unless this is maybe what he actually said to you. He tells you that a man who loses his head is no good for anything. You got to train yourself to stop and think the situation through. This is while he's literally panicking, and yet he knows that much, and a lot of it has to do with because of working in those mines. Mm-hmm. He knows that at any moment, death could creep up on you, and you better always be on the lookout.
Yeah, I mean, this came about when I was headed to Vietnam. I called home, and instead of getting Elsie, my mom, I got Homer, my dad, which was rare. I expected just to say, well, tell mom that I'm headed off to Vietnam, and I'll write when I can. And instead, for one of the few times in his life, my dad said, I want to tell you a story. And even though they were yelling at me to get on the plane with the guys, I said, you know, hold up, I want to hear this. And he started telling me a story of when they carried Albert home, when he was in such a dangerous situation. But he got through it because once you're in a situation like that, you don't panic, you don't run, you've got to think your way through. And if possible, even think your way through before it happens, because you're going to know in your gut something is about to happen. And so he tells the story when he was caught in the great hurricane of 1935.
Well, you know, you just mentioned that feeling in the gut. One of the characters I could name, I'm not going to describe, Soufflé. It's just a great name, character comes in here. But she's, and by the way, every character, from the youngest Rose, all have bits of wisdom that they all explain, and you feel they imbibe it in their cells. That's what makes this journey so fantastic. They're really absorbing wisdom. And one of these things that Soufflé says, and it reminds me of what your dad just told you, you already know you know, you just don't know you know. And that's kind of a funny thing. If you can become aware that you really do know, even what's going to happen sometimes, there's a protective barrier that you can develop. Yeah, and this woman, Soufflé, finds this out.
There's a denial. And we see Homer in somewhat denial during this entire journey. He just thinks if he can just get Albert home, if he can just carry him back to Orlando and drop him off, then Elsie's going to go with him back to Colwood, and they're going to have this American dream type life in that you could possibly have in the coal fields. Yet, in his gut, he knows that there's a lot more going on, and he has to force himself anyway to go forward because he loves this woman so much.
Well, to this point where you write these words, it is the looking that finds the love, not the finding. And both of them are tested in having to find the other person for different reasons. And he comes up, Homer, with that line, it is the looking, not the finding, that is what love is about.
Yes, yes, yes. It's true.
Again, wisdom from youth. I said there's wisdom from everything. A young girl, Rose. We're talking about a young girl, no parents, lives in a shanty shack by herself. And I'm talking a young girl, I think under 10. Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
Yes.
She says this, time is really the only gift we receive from God that we can give to others. And this adventure is all about time, because time has to expand during mm-hmm. this adventure, because mm-hmm. the deadline that was originally given is not going to be met.
Right. And as you read this novel, I don't talk about time that much in terms of, well, this happened on this day and this happened on that day. That doesn't matter. And especially that section where Rose is, they're on the beach. in South Carolina, which is where the real Elsie ended up, her final days, by the way. And there are fantasy things that are happening, supernatural things that are happening, yet it all seems, as it was told to me, very possible, if not probable, that these things actually happen. We start seeing that Albert is a lot more than he seems to be, especially in that part, that Albert can rise above just being this friendly little alligator, that he also takes note of this journey and becomes part of this journey in a greater way, and also the odd little character of the rooster. And the rooster is along on this. My wife kept asking me, Homer, why is the rooster on this journey? And I went, I don't know, Linda, but he knows. And that's why I have him in here, because...
Well, I have to interrupt, because there is that whole element that these animals, both this alligator and rooster, also have an awareness that is awesome.
Yeah.
And they question it even. They're debating it even. Can they really know this? And the answer is, they know something. Yeah.
And I think, I know that book clubs love this book, and they try to figure out what's real and what's not real, but especially the rooster. Who or what is the rooster? Why is the rooster on this journey? And I think it's one of those discussion points that everybody's going to have a different idea. The rooster, just for the folks who haven't read the novel, shows up at the very beginning, and it goes away for major parts of the book, and then it comes back, and then it goes away, and then it comes back. And it always seems to favor Homer, my future father, and it sits on his shoulder, and it sits on Albert's head sometimes. And my brother read the early advance of this novel, and of course I wanted him to see it early because it's about our parents, to see what he would think about it. He loved it, by the way, and he decided that the rooster was a guardian angel that was sent down to look after Homer, our father, because considering that it was Elsie in the passenger seat there, he needed all the help he could get. Some people say the rooster is God himself. I don't know. I don't know who or why the rooster was there. I just know that he was, and he knew why.
And you know what? And as it so often references, it doesn't matter. And this is a great line again by your dad, Homer, when he's asked by Mom, we're lost, we're lost, we're lost. And he says, we are not lost. We're just not sure where we are. And that's what Kismet's about. That's search to find out, where are we in this life, even if we don't understand it. That's the other underpinning philosophy through this. You don't have to understand it to really understand it. I know that sounds funny, but that is what's laying here. It's laid out there.
Yeah, when I started writing this book, I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to tell it, Barry. But as I started to tell it, some underlying truths did start to bubble up. And you have to be careful on this. You don't want to just, it's like writing it on a sign. Okay, here's truism number one, truism number two. These came from somewhere else. As I wrote this, it was often I had to get out of the way of myself. Authors will tell you, especially when they write perhaps the book that they're best known for, or a book that they personally like, that they feel like that actually somebody else is writing this book while they're writing it. So it's a matter of getting out of the way of yourself as you wrote it. For carrying Albert home, I felt that. I've also felt that when I wrote Rocket Boys. It was almost as if somebody else came inside of me and put my hands on the keyboard and started writing. And I knew it was kind of magical as I was writing it. And the little voice in the back of my head said, get out of the way of it, Homer. Get out of the way of it, Homer. This is, let it go. Let it go. Let it go. And I did.
Homer, as you say every journey has an end, and this one is no exception. And our time is up, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing the journey of Elsie and Homer with all of us today.
Thank you, Barry. My pleasure.
It is my pleasure. And thank you all for joining us. Now, before Homer leaves, I'd like to leave you with these few more words from Carrying Albert Home. You know, when I asked Captain Laird to let me take Albert home, he said maybe this journey was so I would find out the meaning of life. But instead, it's only created mysteries I can't even begin to understand. Maybe that's what life is, Elsie said. Mysteries atop mysteries. We think we know everything, but we don't know anything. Not really. I'm Barry Kibrick. Look between the mysteries atop the mysteries. And even if we really don't know anything, we still may find out a little bit more about the journey of life. Thank you so much, Homer.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more, please subscribe or become a patron of the show at BarryKibrick.com to keep it going every week. Thank you.